it's the game is tomorrow. It's Thursday, and you're the early game, 5 o'clock, Minnesota and BU, and then the late game, Quinnipiac, who we beat in the ECACs. Quinnipiac, they managed to get through, and they play Michigan, who killed us. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
there we go.
I'm going to run. I get there's Dave Joseph calling. It's got to be something important.
All right.
Either that or I've been thrown out of the press room again.
Let us know. Mike Welch, everybody. We'll talk to Mike on Friday. Let's take the break. And when we come back, Sid Fernando, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. We got a bunch to do with him. Then Alan Foreman is going to join us. And then in hour three, it's the Horseman Conversations, Jerry O'Dwyer, Ron Fauché, Ray Lou Gutierrez. All right? That's a lot of horse racing entertainment. I'm delighted. I'm seeing a lot of retweeting and noting of the South Carolina information, which is great. And I want to thank our friend Rich for cluing us in. Rich Cesternino, South Carolina. If you're out there, here, I'll do a Larry King. South Carolina, you're on the clock. Call your state legislator in Columbia. Columbia's the capital, right? I should know. When I worked in Charlotte for Proctor, I used to tromp South Carolina. Myrtle. We used to go down to Myrtle for the preseason. We used to go up and down the coast. All the seafood restaurants sell them frying oil, Frymax. Yeah, that was we called that pre-sale. You'd go down like in March and April before the or even earlier maybe, and sell all the joints. You go in, you get a mound of fried shrimp for like $7.99 for like 6 pounds of fried shrimp. back after this, at the races at Gulfstream. It's a bunch of frivolity going on here.
It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? that the history books were written on dirt, that the greatest of all time was a horse.
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back for the second half. It's about 20 minutes into hour two, and so we'll go all the way to noon with Sid, who's joining us now, Alan Foreman to follow, and then Ron Fauché, Ray Lou Gutierrez, and Jerry O'Dwyer to all celebrate their, well, for Ray Lou and for Fauché to celebrate their seasons, of course, at Fairgrounds, and then they finished with a flourish. But for Jerry O'Dwyer to go to Dubai with Sibelius and win the Golden Shaheen, just fabulous. Right now, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning. Oh, there we go. Try it again. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Can you hear me?
I can. That was my fault. Getting going. And we had a really fun time last week together at Ocala. That feels like a month ago.
Yeah, that was... Was that last week?
It was. Believe it or not, right?
A chance to do a little of your stuff and be a secondary host when we were talking to John Sikora.
Well, that was, and I appreciate that. For those of you that missed the. I'm losing track of time. The Monday show was delayed. We had to tape it yesterday ourselves off of the replay, but it's up now on the website and at the on iTunes, etc., Spotify. So for those of you that missed Monday, you can access it now. And the same thing, the John Sikora piece went up on Thursday evening last week. So if you didn't hear John, you really should. It got tremendous feedback, and every time Sikora. You know, basically holds forth, Sid, it's important listening because he approaches the game in with a very different vantage point and with a certain kind of intellect and understanding.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, he's one of the few guys in Kentucky, you know, big farm owners that really is pretty much independent in intellect, spirit. You know, he doesn't follow the group, and he, you know, really looks at every issue really a refreshing way to be because pretty much groups over there follow one group or another, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he tends to parse every issue independently.
No, it's refreshing. So I invite people to visit the archive and take it in. Let's dive into a number of topics, Sid, and I know you've got a drop-dead time this morning, so I want to, and I got to get to Alan Foreman too, but obviously the Japan topic and having to digest the, you know, not just the UAE Derby winner, Dermis Otagaki, but also the nice winner of the World Cup. You know, as it happens, we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but the Derby went faster, actually, than the World Cup, and that was a little notable. But what's your overarching thoughts, Sid, about how Japan got to where they are, and you know you know, the methodology and the habit and practice that they've employed as breeders. Look, bring it over to the app. Thanks, Mike.
Well, you know, I posted a piece that I had done in 1995 with Daily Racing Form on Twitter, which was just about Sunday Silence after his first crop of three-year-olds run in December. And in that piece, I actually wrote, so this was in 1995, that over the last 3 years, so from 92 to 95 at least, Japan's form, racing form, was comparable to the best internationally. So it's not something that you know, happened overnight, and it's not something that really was some kind of big state-sponsored thing. Individually, you can really relate it to one guy, Zenya Yoshida, who was the founder of Shedai, and it's really his, he's the most pivotal guy in turning this industry kind of really expanding it. There have been plenty of other people, but of course he was a co-owner of Sunday Silence, and then he bought out his partners and took Sunday Silence to Japan, and that, you know, was a massive change in the direction of Japanese breeding. In fact, you know, all three of these winners in Dubai, they all have Sunday Silence in their pedigrees one way or another. And of course, after he died, he had three sons, excuse me, two of them specifically, Teruya, also known as Terry Yoshida, he got the Shedai part of the farm. Tatsumi Yoshida has Northern Farm. There's Haruya too, but let's just talk about Terry and Tatsumi. All the brothers own the Stallion Station, which is called Shedai Stallion Station or something like that. But each of them have their own farms. And each of them have, you know, between 600 or 700 mares. At least Terry and Tatsumi do. And, you know, if you look at it, Equinox was bred by Northern Farm, which is Tatsumi Yoshida. Terry Yoshida bred Dermasotagake. Terry also bred last year's UAE Derby winner, Crown Pride. So when you start to, and just to backtrack for a second, the third Japanese winner, let's see, Equinox, Dermasotagake, and oh, of course, the Dubai World Cup winner, Ushba Tesoro. He was bred by Chiyoda Farm, but the sire, Orfev, was bred by Shedai. So you can just see right away, just looking at the pedigrees of just these three horses, the profound impact that Shedai had, going back to Zenyo Yoshida bringing Sunday Silence over there, and the continuing impact they have through his sons, Terry and Tatsumi. And of course, everybody knows that, you know, Japanese breeders come and they buy brood mares at our sales every year. Two big buyers, of course, are the Yoshida brothers as well. But they breed a lot of mares to their stallions. They're commercial breeders. And think about it. If each of them have, say, 700 mares each, just these two brothers, that's 1,400 mares. That's bigger than some state breeding program. Lots of state breeding programs in this country. And they're not shy about breeding a lot of mares to their stallions either. You know, 200 plus to their top horses. Kazuna, I noted in a tweet, bred 240 mares in 2020. So, you know, it's a big commercial breeding operation. And side by side with that is the JRA's growth. The JRA is highly regulated, as we talked about with John Segura last year. They control the entire betting for the JRA circuit, which is the prominent circuit. There's also the NAR, which is primarily dirt. The JRA is primarily turf. And they've got tremendous training facilities, and that training component goes hand in hand too. The racing program is one of the few around now that is really vigorously programmed for distance racing, for lack of a better word. For example, the Japanese 2,000 guineas equivalent is at a mile and a quarter, whereas in Europe it's at a mile. Their derby, of course, is 2,500 meters, which is a mile and a half. But then their St. Ledger is a two-mile race. In Europe, it's a mile and three quarters. And whereas in Europe, the top horses don't attempt the St. Ledger anymore, in Japan, they go after it with gusto. You know, Deep Impact, the Japanese Triple Crown winner and a tremendous stallion, son of Sunday Silence. In fact, his successor, won that race. Are you there, Steve?
I am.
Yeah. So, you get a lot of stamina that that's highly sought after, and the racing program plays to it. Now, what they've done recently is, they've also incorporated, as the stamina starts to weigh heavily in pedigrees, they have come after some speedier horses. They had their own speed horse in Japan, in Lord Canaloa, who was a sprinter. He's sire of Amandai and many others. He's an absolute sprinter, one of the best that was produced in Japan. But they've gone after others too. Drefong was brought over there, champion sprinter here, and he's got a horse that's coming for the Derby. Mind Your Biscuits, sprinter miler, he was taken over there to breed to some of these mares that have a ton of stamina in them. Because for years, what happened was not only did Sunday Silence go over there, but years before that and years after that, the Japanese also had a penchant for bringing a lot of classic winners from Europe over there. And, so there's a lot of classic European blood in their pedigrees as well. So there's some stamina there. But they're cognizant, Steve, of having to add some speed back into it. And, of course, the favorite destination is the United States. And two horses like Drefong and Mind Your Biscuits really weren't going to be popular here as stallions. They went after them. I know for a fact, on a personal level, that they also came after Mr. Fipke's B Jersey. They wanted to take him there as well. But of course, Mr. Fipke keeps his own stallions, and he kept them. But lately, they have been taking a lot of speed horses as well as others. That's notable. And like Sunday Silence, though he was by Halo, he had a very weak female family. A lot of these speed horses they're taking are kind of pedigrees off the beaten path. Mind Your Biscuits by Posse, Drefong by Pio Ponte. So you can see that performance is paramount for them. You could even say more than pedigree.
And you know, you see when you glance at these female families, and there's certain, you know, there's certain names that kind of catch the eye. Nureyev and Alleged. This is in Equinox's female family. Lafarge figures prominently on the female on the sire line. The Dancing Brave and King Halo. Herbiger, I see in here as well, and Nijinsky, and so on. I mean, there's a very strong, wide, you know, base of stamina and stoutness that is at the root. You know, that's basically at the core of these horses, and then, you know, whatever it takes on the top end. I mean, it really does feel, looking at these pedigrees, you've got the classic speed on the top and stamina on the bottom.
Well, if you take a look at Equinox's pedigrees, if we're talking about it, the Fourth Dam is by Nureyev, and she produced a good Group One type of horse in Europe. The Third Dam is by Alleged. Lots of stamina there.
Yep.
The Second Dam is by Tony Binn. Again, a ton of stamina. He's an arc winner. Now, the First Dam is by King Halo, who is one of these horses they imported from the United States. And then she was bred to a very top-level Japanese horse, Kitasan Black. But the interesting thing about him is that he, top-level stallion, but he was by a stallion called Black Tide. And Black Tide's claim to fame is that he wasn't a great racehorse, but he was a full brother to Deep Impact, their champion over there. And so, that's basically a lot of turf, a lot of stamina in Equinox's pedigree, and it kind of shows in the way he ran. But if you look at some of the other ones, Japanese ones, Derma Sotogake, for example, he's the one that was by Mind Your Biscuits. He's out of a stakes-winning Japanese mare. The Second Dam, again, by Tony Binn, the arc winner.
Hmm.
Yep. So you can see that. Now you go to the Ushba Tesoro. Ushba Tesoro is, of course, by Orfev, a great staying son of the Sunday Silent Stallion Stay Gold. Orfev, famously known for his antics on the track and also his good runs in the arc. He was bred to a mare by King Kamiyamiya, who was a very top level King Mambo stallion in Japan. The Second Dam is by Septiem CL, one of the rare Seattle slew horses that performed well at a distance on turf in Europe. The Third Dam is by Elamana Moo, an extremely top-level staying influence. Again, it just points at kind of what we've been talking about. A lot of staying blood in their pedigrees, and in certain cases here with Derma Sotogake, who stays, but speed was added in with Mind Your Biscuits.
There's so many things about these horses, and I'm sure there's... Well, I know that Chris McGrath wrote a piece. I printed it this morning, but I haven't read it yet, and he tackles it. There's so many fascinating portions of this that just are basically the same themes that we talk about. You mentioned Black Tide being a brother of Deep Impact. How many times do we talk about stallions in North America getting a chance to stand because they're a sibling of a top performer, and maybe they got injured, maybe their career was abbreviated somehow. Then there's little gems in some of these pedigrees. Kittison Black, who you mentioned as Equinox's sire. The second dam, Otomi Gokoro, is a daughter of Judge Angelucci, who's one of those horses. This is the gentries. One of those horses that, people say, well, why would they stand that horse? Who's going to stand him? And he obviously was useful in Japan, and here he is showing up in a horse that everybody's cooing over.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of these horses that did go over there. Not all of them are successful, but they would have had daughters that would have bred on, like King Halo, for example. He's another horse like Judge Angelucci, who was sent over. The Judge Angelucci, I remember him very distinctly because he was a horse with a lot of speed and he had a white face on him. And
he's a horse that time forgot. He's one of my horses that time forgot.
Yeah, exactly.
A horse that didn't get good until he was a handicap division horse.
Yeah, and he had a lot of speed to him. He was a great 9-furlong horse. But the type of horse that might not have really found a home in this country did in Japan. The Japanese have taken stallions. It's like throwing a lot of stuff against the wall, and some of them stuck. Obviously, notably, the most famous is Sunday Silence.
Yep.
But, there have been a lot of horses that didn't pan out, too. Sunday Silence kind of was a major game changer for them. And his influence in their pedigrees, continues to show. And, not all of these horses, not all Japanese horses are great. But because they have a great racing program, you can really weed, you throw these horses into this program and the best ones that come up, those are the horses that are of high international quality. And so lately they've been traveling all over the world. What happened earlier on with the Yoshidas is that Zenya Yoshida was an internationalist. He had a farm in Kentucky as well, Fontainebleau Farm. And Fontainebleau, the name itself in French, is a tip-off because he was a great fan of racing in France. And that was the destination where the Japanese horses first would go internationally. In fact, Zenya Yoshida had a great Northern Dancer Stallion, Northern Taste, who was raced in France, was a Group 1 winner, and then went. He was another horse, by the way, with a big white face on him. He was sent over there to stand at stud and was a leading sire there. This was predating Sunday Silence. He also had another horse, a son of Roberto, I believe, named Real Shaddai. He might have been raced in France as well. And notably, when Sunday Silence himself went to stud and some of his first foals started making names for themselves from his first crop of three-year-olds, a good filly of his was sent internationally for the first time, and she was sent to France to race. So, they've had this big, big interest in French racing. I attribute that to Zenya Yoshida's own interest in racing in France, and because of that, a lot of the Japanese owners there became involved in, you know, in these later years trying to go for the Ark because of that French entree from Zen Yoshida. And of course, now the Ark is a major target for a lot of these Japanese horses. Some of them have failed there because the Ark is a soft ground race, and the Japanese program is really based on very hard ground, hard turf. That's how it's played in Japan. That's why you have so many fast times. The races are blisteringly fast, and it's on really firm to hard ground. It's one of the reasons why the Japanese so far have not been able to take that Ark because of that soft ground. Another obvious angle that they're now showing is the dirt prowess. Some of these horses were, Ushba Tesoro started off as a turf horse. I think his record is like 3-for-22 on turf, but on dirt he's turned into a completely different horse. And so some of these horses now are getting dirt opportunities. And of course, once again, it's Yoshida's leading the way. You know, like I said, mentioned Crown Pride last year was bred by Terry Yoshida, and Dermisoda Gake, also bred by Terry Yoshida. So, again, Yoshida's play a big role. The program there plays a big role. The trainers are very, very proficient trainers there. I mean, high-level guys, and they use a lot of technology in their training. You know, it's taken as a whole. These are some of the stuff. These are some of the factors that have been leading to, you know, a lot of the successes, as well as the idea that a lot of these owners would like to expand internationally, and these dirt races have been, very alluring to them. They've got a lot of purse money. You know, Japan has a lot of purse money to begin with, but, you know, you turn the Dubai World Cup and the Saudi Cup, and some of these races, are bigger.
Now, doing it on the international stage, and of course, the focus on the Breeders' Cup in recent years, as well as Winter Carnival, and pretty much everywhere. HK,
and they look like they got a bunch of horses coming for the Kentucky Derby
yep.
this year.
Could be 3-4. It could end up being 20% of the gate. On that topic, and before we adjourn as well, Sid, I appreciate the Japan survey. A quick hit, Florida. We'll save Two Phils and King's Barnes for conversation as we get to Kentucky. But Florida Derby and Arkansas Derby. Any interesting horses in either? I mean, we know the top line with Forte coming into Florida, and frankly, I think Reincarnate. This is being viewed as a potential, coming out party for him at Oaklawn. But quick thoughts on either race?
Yeah, I think Reincarnate is, he had that trouble in that race. He got hammered a 16th of a mile from the finish, and so everybody, is jumping on him, and he seems legitimate. It's just so ironic, isn't it, that this was a Baffert horse that made his debut on turf, because Baffert didn't think he was good enough on the dirt versus a bunch of horses he had over there. And so he's had a circuitous route going from two turf starts back to dirt and then showing what he's got on dirt, which is, you know, what the good Magics do. I think Angel of Empire is going to be pretty dangerous in that race, and not just because, you know, we're involved with our client, Alba. I think he's kind of being not given the respect, perhaps, of the winner of the Rebel that he should. In the Florida Derby, Ramiro Restrepo, Mage, he's a co-owner of Mage, another son of good Magic like Reincarnate. I happened to run into Ramiro at in Ocala at Craig Burnick's crawfish boil, and I had a long conversation with him. Really an amazing story about how he ended up buying this horse. They went way over what they thought they were going to be having to pay for him. Ramiro was egged on by Gustavo and actually, you know, bid on this horse without having fully the funds to do it because they went way over what they thought they'd have to. And Ramiro, I hope Ramiro can relate that story generally to people. So then he had to really hustle to get people to take legs of this horse. And it'll be a great story if, you know, he works out. He's a talented colt. He second start, that last start, he ran fourth. And I think he's going to run a better race. Ramiro really doesn't want to go to the Derby with this horse. He wants to think about the Preakness. But I think he's a talented colt. I saw him win. In fact, you and I were there that day. You were with me that day.
Yeah.
The Pegasus, yep. When he won.
Yep.
And I'm looking for him to run a bigger race this time.
Agreed. And I also imagine that you had a hand in the breeding of West Coast Cowboy, the West Coast colt.
Yeah.
And a May foal, yeah. By the way. The horse that... Safi Joseph entered in here and is, you know, he's going to have to speed up, but he won it first asking, even though it was a slow race, and this looks like a horse that's a work in progress, and again,
yeah.
as a May foal, he's got every reason to be a little behind everybody.
And I want to just bring in something else, too. The West bred him, and the West also bred Airtime, who's going in the Arkansas Derby. They lost him on the claim. They lost him for $50,000 in the claiming box. But he's a horse I kind of like, too, Airtime. And it's ironic that the West are represented by two horses in two of these big races, and then next weekend they'll be represented by, well, in a couple, 2 weeks, I guess, Hit Show and the Wood Memorial,
right?
And the West also will have Punch Bowl and the Fantasy. Those are four horses from their breeding program.
That's tremendous. And Punch Bowl is a horse that very well may have a bit of a coming out party.
I think so. I really think so.
Right?
I think that both Punch Bowl and Hit Show, knock on wood, if, you know, I think they have a chance to run really big and, you know, go to Kentucky.
Sid, I appreciate it. This was great. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale and, of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. We're in now into the second half of the breeding season, and there's still decisions that can be made and recommendations that Sid and Roger can help you with. And Francis, so get to it. Sid, I will talk to you next week from Lexington.
All right, good talking, bro.
I appreciate it. There's our man, Sid Fernando, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Let's get to Alan Foreman. Alan's been kind enough to wait for us. We managed to fall behind. But the Mike Welch visit was, you know, how do you say no to a Mike Welch visit? And how do you say no to Alan Foreman? Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. Nobody, you can't say no to Alan Foreman. back. How many times have you been out of Florida this winter?
Well, I've been down here a good part of the winter, but with work and everything, I've been going back and forth. But I'm going to close up shop next week and come back to Baltimore for the rest of the year.
Outstanding.
It was nice. The first time I've wintered in Florida with my wife, and it's been great down here. I really enjoyed it, but you know, all I did was move on my work down here. But it's been great.
All right. Well, it, we appreciate you coming down like this. Just don't start having dinner at 4:30.
You know, sometimes it's the only way you can have a quiet meal down here.
early bird, there it goes.
My parents spent 40 years down here when I arrived, and you know, we would come down to visit, and we'd have to go to dinner at 5:30. We'd look at each other and say, "We, you know, we can't do this for too long." And now we're doing it.
Of course, that's exactly right. And listen, the second entree is half price. How do you come on? How do you beat that?
I never thought I'd live to see the day when I would be doing early bird, but. As my kids say, it all comes around.
No, that's true. I couldn't resist. I will say this: having spent the afternoon by the pool, maybe a little beach, you also get a little tired. It for whatever the sun and the surf and whatever it sort of forces you into that schedule.
Well. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I enjoy the evenings here.
Yeah.
Where we are, we have the most gorgeous sunsets, and this has been an incredible winter in South Florida. There's been little to no rain. It's been warm. The sunsets have been magnificent. We're right on the intercoastal, and so we see it. And, it's very therapeutic. So I actually like eating early and then sitting out on the balcony and just kind of enjoying the sights and everything.
Yeah, so. that's something my mother, our whole life living in the Northeast, she never once talked about a sunrise or a sunset, except when it came to my bar mitzvah and our big dance. She would either call me or if I was there, she would say, "Come look, did you see the sun? Look at the sunset." It was like crazy. Same exact. It's funny you bring that up. That's one of my memories of my mother. And in fact, in memory of my mother, I went to the boys yesterday in Delray. I had to go to the boys and get a few things for the apartment because she would take me to the boys, and it's the craziest scene in there. So I went in there and I got a little misty, but I also got some stuffed cabbage, so
it's been great. We aren't Florida people. I don't think I could ever live down here, but it's been a really nice break for me for the winter, and the stress level this year's been pretty high between highs of Maryland and a bunch of other things, and so at least I can do it with the sun shining and nice weather and get out a little bit.
Well,
so it's been very good for me.
Well, as I say to you, the last couple of years, for somebody that's retiring, you seem as busy as ever, and right? That's very true.
Now my wife looks at me, and she's almost demanding that I retire, but I've still got a lot of energy, and there's a lot to do, and that's off the table.
Exactly.
So I'm sticking around for a little while longer.
Exactly right. Before we talk KISA, which is the principal reason I wanted to have you kind of come in and go through this laundry list of news, because it's been coming hot and heavy, I do want to slip in one thing that you've been involved with from its origin, and that is the equine injury database. And I've made a couple of references to it in the last couple of weeks, but the report came back out, and the news just continues to be very positive. I say all the time, as an industry, we are doing ourselves no favors by trying to use statistics like this as some sort of a selling tool, but it's very good. It's a good barometer and temperature take about the work that's going in on track surfaces and on the overviews. Talk a little bit, Alan, about how good this news was.
So, look, we're not ones to take credit, and I don't think that the HISA safety program, quite frankly, it's only safety program started with July a year ago, could have had substantial impact for the statistics that, have been put out. But it did create a mindset, and I think that's helpful. I'm sorry if I sound like I'm gloating, but we've been very bullish on the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan. It's been in effect for 5 years. We've got, you know, it's metric-based. You know, we do a gap analysis of all of our participating jurisdictions. And, we've seen the progress. And I suspected that the national statistics would come down because we saw a dramatic drop in fatalities in two or three of our jurisdictions in the Mid-Atlantic that we've been tracking, West Virginia, Pennsylvania in particular. Maryland had its lowest fatality rate in decades last year, even with the track surface problems. And so, you know, we're seeing the effects of it. And the Mid-Atlantic Strategic Plan was built into the HISA safety program and something that we have been insisting should be a national program. So it's working. It works. And I think that now with other states who have not been participating in the safety program are going to be required to do it. That's only going to help things going forward. So I'm real pleased about it. And you can see, not to digress to HISA, but you can see the effects of a national safety program. They're finally going to grab Arizona by the horns and get them straightened out, or, you know, they're not going to be able to simulcast. And that's something we've been talking about in the Mid-Atlantic for some time. Jurisdictions that have been not willing to implement a safety program and cooperate.
And the fact that it seems like that situation with Turf Paradise is kind of being monitored as a bit of a litmus test or a test case for how HISA can impact a scenario like that.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And we've actually said that to HISA, that, you know, if you want a litmus test for the importance of the safety program, what are you doing in Arizona? Because what's going on at Turf Paradise is not and should not be acceptable to the industry. And they've essentially said to us, we understand, stay tuned. And so we're watching it, because I think you're absolutely right. If they can't grab the Arizona situation, the Turf Paradise situation, and get that turned around, then I think we're all probably thinking that HISA is going to be something that it isn't. But I they're up to it, and I think they're going to do it. I think they are.
Let's hit, and I don't know if we should do this chronologically or how much of this we can kind of agglomerate, Alan, but, you know, we had the FTC on Friday, rubber stamp the rules, the ADMC rules, which was, you know, completely expected. We had a group named as the as essentially the you know, the High Commission, the ADMC panel members that would be involved in hearings, right? Hearing officers, is that a fair characterization of them?
Essentially, that's what they'll be. They'll substitute for what were stewards' hearings under what historically has been the way racing handles disciplinary measures.
Well, let's start with that. And it seems like an interesting mix of people from a variety of regulator positions and other. This seems to be kind of a little bit of a hallmark of HISA's initiative. There's lots of good people that are being drawn into and utilized in the framework of the entire scenario.
So it was, you know, my biggest fear was when they started rolling out proposed regulations that all medication violations were going to go to arbitration. And that would have been extraordinarily expensive, extraordinarily time-consuming, and didn't make any sense for the what we call the controlled therapeutic medication violations here. You know, the medications that have been on the RCI controlled list. Those are situations that can be handled very easily, very quickly, and quite frankly, most will probably be resolved administratively. But there was no need to go through an arbitration process. And what they had originally proposed was a national stewards panel. And I think a number of us were questioning whether or not that made any sense. And so they landed on what certainly what we recommended is get a group of very qualified people together to act as your disciplinary group and assign them to cases in the controlled medication area. If it's a violation of an anti-doping or a banned substance medication, they're going to go to arbitration. They're your serious cases. And they're, trust me when I tell you, they're few and far between. The contamination cases will be very carefully analyzed before they're assigned to anybody for a hearing, and they probably will be resolved short of a hearing. So you're talking about those cases where an offending horseman does not want to resolve the case administratively, so he will get a hearing before, or she will get a hearing before, one of those who've been appointed to the panel. I know some of them. I actually recommended a couple of them to Heise, who I knew were applying for it, because I know they're qualified, have a long history of dealing with these kinds of things. I represent National Steeplechase Association now for decades, and have worked with their Stewards Advisory Committee and their Appeals Hearing Review Committee. They do an excellent job. So I think this is a process that's I think it's a process that's going to work just fine.
And some names, touch on some of the names, but you know, when you see Barbara Borden involved and Duncan Patterson, Kim Sawyer from California, I mean, you got names that are, you know, instantly familiar, and of course Mark Guilfoyle already involved. Then you kind of dot around in terms of the other locations. Indiana, a couple of people from Indiana, Texas, and New Mexico, really. Connie Estes, Lori DeNoto from Ohio, who works at Mahoning and Thistledown, Patricia Bowman, who's a steward at Indiana. So there's the IRB, Eddie Arroyo, Illinois Racing Board. You mentioned Steeplechase, Rick Abbott, who's with the...
Rick is terrific. He's on the Appeals Review Committee. He's very qualified. These are not going to be complicated cases. These are, first of all, if a positive test is determined and is not subject to challenge, the person's going to get redistributed. Okay, the disqualification is not going to be an issue. So essentially what these people are going to be doing is looking at penalties and what penalties to mete out for the facts and circumstances of a particular situation under the ADMC program. So, by the time it gets to one of these individuals, the fact of the positive test will have already been determined. And it will not be for them to determine. I don't believe it'll be for them to determine. Because there will have been a split sample test. The analytical data is all reviewable before the hearing. So it's really going to be arguing in mitigation of a penalty or the setting of a penalty, because there's wide latitude as to penalties. And my hope is they're not going to be real busy early on. We won't know for a couple of weeks as the new program goes into effect. But as we settle into the Heise program, I think that... most of the controlled therapeutic cases are going to get resolved administratively.
Very good. And on that topic too, in terms of the FTC approving the rules, anything notable about that?
I read the ruling yesterday. They've had a lot of time to deal with this. If you remember, when they backed off back in December, it was the end of what was then a mandatory review period. Heise had already proposed the regulations. The FTC had received substantial comment from a number of groups and individuals. When the FTC does that review, it reverts back to the authority to respond to each and every comment, and then the FTC weighs the two comments and determines whether or not the action is appropriate or not. And so they have had additional time to review the comments, and they did. I mean, they went through every comment that they received, many of which were just challenging the constitutionality of Heise, which is not for the Federal Trade Commission to determine. It was determined whether there is ample support for the rule that's being enacted. What is the support for that rule? And is it consistent with the statute, and particularly the updated statute? And so I have a, I think it's important that people read the opinion issued by the FTC and understand at least what the process was, whether you agree with their final determination or not. And it allowed for a lot of the comment that you read about criticizing HISA, that's all in there. And specific instances of those who have objected to certain regulations and what HISA's response is at where was, and then the FTC's conclusion. So here we are. You can call it rubber stamp. They were pretty methodical on this one, but we'll see going forward. Hopefully there won't be many instances where we'll have to go to the FTC and ask for them to reverse or to modify what HISA is doing. And I have to tell you, as one who's been living this front row seat, the engagement with HISA has been terrific. It's been substantial. They listen. There's a process in place, particularly with the Horsemen's Advisory Committee. So I think that a lot of the temperature with this has gone down a bit.
I've got literally a half a dozen pieces here that I could fold into this. I will point out the press release that was offered out there the other day that is worth. This actually goes back to last week. It's at the bottom of my stack, but the top 10 ways HISA will change racing, and I would recommend people go through that. You can find. I'll put a link up. I think I got it. Yeah, I printed it off of TDN about the various elements and the in terms of the uniformity and some of the things Alan's discussing here in terms of how violations will be handled, out of competition testing, and more. So I would utilize that. Alan, do you have any reaction to the story late last week as well? The USTA, the Trotting Association, their president floating a alternate bill that could potentially be offered, depending on what happens with the legalities of HISA and the legal challenges as they continue to wind its way through courts. Haven't seen much reaction to this. And what had you heard, and what does it mean?
It's a non-starter, Steve. I mean, this is old news. And quite frankly, I don't know if the USTA, if the standard bred industry wants a compact, they can go create the compact. They don't need to go to Congress to do it. They can go state by state to do it. And I kind of chuckle because, I've been on the show before and I've talked about compact. And we could put a compact together in thoroughbred racing in 2 minutes. We already have the enabling legislation in Maryland and Delaware. Interestingly, when we put the compact together in 2018, which was pre-HISA, and we thought it was probably the best way to achieve uniformity, the one group that fought tooth and nail from state to state to prevent it from happening was the standard bred industry. They prevented it in New York. Governor Cuomo had it in his budget 3 straight years, and the New York standard bred industry fought to kill it because they didn't want a compact to somehow gravitate to the standard bred industry, notwithstanding that the language of the legislation provided it was specifically thoroughbred only. They fought it in Pennsylvania. They fought it elsewhere. I dealt directly with Russell Williams on the compact, as I did with the National HPPA, and they both voted it down. So I don't know whether it's buyer's remorse or what they're thinking now, but the idea that they're going to somehow get Congress, which you don't need for a compact, you just need the states to do it, but somehow Congress is going to do it, is, in my opinion, folly. If they couldn't stop HISA, how are they going to get a compact bill passed to replace HISA? And these were the very people who were opposed to a compact three, four, 5 years ago. So I don't give it any credence, and I don't think they can get it done. And if they could get the legislation passed, I don't think they could get enough states to adopt it to even create the compact.
Well, and speaking of the states, with the with the March 27th, or today's Wednesday, with the Monday's deadline, or not so much a deadline as a start date, with the implementation of the ADMC program, the states, the entities involved, Arkansas, California, Florida, Kentucky, Maryland, New York, Pennsylvania, Will Rogers, listed as a standalone, and then Arizona, Finger Lakes standing alone, the IRB, the New York Gaming Commission in terms of post-race testing, and Ohio. When it comes to the collection of samples, I mean, how much of a smooth transition do you anticipate on this front, Alan? Because we understand that in some cases, people that have worked for racing commissions have been hired almost as independent contractors. Is that the right way to term it?
Well, look, it's done on an individual and state-by-state basis. The statute provided for racing commissions to enter into cooperative agreements with HISA and HIWU. Principally, we're talking about HIWU now, to effectuate the anti-doping program. And in those states that chose not to cooperate with HISA, HIWU, that HIWU would have to go out and hire and provide the personnel that the state was not willing to provide. New York, for example, the Gaming Commission did not enter into a cooperative agreement, and HIWU and HISA stepped in, and they have secured the necessary personnel to carry out the program, and that's on a state-by-state basis. So in those states where there is cooperation, the state personnel, those who were performing those services previously, are doing so, and in those states where there's no cooperative agreement, HIWU has stepped in either to hire the personnel directly, or however they have chosen to engage those who were previously performing their services. I don't know specifically, because HIWU, that has been for them to do, but they made clear that they, on day one, they were prepared to go forward, and it appears that that is the case. And you do have a number of jurisdictions that haven't started racing yet. The Delaware, Monmouth, for example, in the Mid-Atlantic, Virginia won't race until the summer, so there's time to prepare for that. Insofar as implementation is concerned, today's Thursday, I don't even know what day it is.
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, and I don't think you're going to hear very much with sample collection and positive tests for another probably week to 10 days, because prior to Monday, when the FTC approved the program, it was permissible to treat horses under the old rules. And so you've got to be careful when you've got withdrawal guidelines, detection limits, screening limits, that you're not implicating horses that were treated before the program went into effect on Monday. So there's going to be a bit of a lag before you see the impact of the new rules. But I haven't gotten a single phone call from anybody telling me that there has been a problem at the track with respect to sample collection and things like that.
Well, and of course, we've only had, we've had Monday, Tuesday, we've had like...
Yeah, that's my point. It's too soon to draw any conclusions, and if there are going to be problems, they're likely to, perhaps show next week, week after next.
The train stoking up and pulling out of the station, and we'll watch and react to anything and everything that comes along at this point. There's a lot of parallel tracks that are running right now with all of this.
I look at it this way, Steve. This is uniformity. for those who for years have been saying, we want uniformity, we need uniformity, here it is. If this falls, if this gets struck down, I don't think you will see uniformity at this level in the industry again. I just don't think it's achievable. So whether this is perfect or not, whether people like it or not, you now have uniformity, and it's going to be uniform. And, you know, I guess history will decide whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, necessary or not. But for this, again, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, we now have a national system under one set of rules.
We will hope for the best, and I will not offer the back half of that, you know, in terms of preparing for the alternate elements. But there'll be hiccups. That no matter what form this was going to take, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be elements that need to be, you know, either adjusted or you know, worked on. And as you mentioned, and as so many horsemen that have been involved and have reached out, or that have been involved the way Ron Moquette and Mark Cassie are involved, you know, they have said that the willingness is there to, you know, do what is going to be expedient and efficient for everybody. You know, there's a greater good that everybody's trying to reach here.
And I agree with that. And I have to tell you that I think Lisa Lazarus has been a godsend. I think she's just been terrific. It's a very difficult position. She's handled it well. She's not afraid of criticism. She's not afraid to go into the lion's den. She's a good listener. She's been responsive, and I think that she's winning over the skeptics. And the process is working. They're not going to agree with everything that we recommend to them, but each of our interactions with them have been very positive. They've been listening. They've been willing to make change. And you got to give it a chance. You know, this is supposed to be for the best interest of the industry, and I think it is. And like I just said, you will not, if this falls, uniformity will not happen. It's not achievable. I'm convinced of that. I've worked on it long enough to know that all these people who talk about, well, if you did it this way or that way, or we're willing to do it, but if you would just do this or do that, I'm sorry. But unfortunately, it had to be jammed down the industry's throat to make it happen.
Alan Foreman, everybody, THA, Thoroughbred Horsemen Association, and we will... I will save Maryland issues for our usual Pimlico summit.
Good idea.
All right, maybe then we have to have a Pimlico summit at the Essen Room too this year.
Well, I certainly in the next few weeks we'll have some things to talk about with respect to the future of Maryland racing.
All right, because I know that
we'll look forward to that.
Well, because I can tell you that having been at OBS, I heard some. You know, rumblings and some people on edge, and so I'm anxious, and I turn to you for that, you know, for reassurances, and when the time is right, let us know.
We'll look forward to it.
Alan Foreman, everybody. Alan, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
There we go. Alan Foreman. All right. We got what do we got? We got 35 minutes, and I've got Jerry O'Dwyer is kind of MIA, so we're going to go with Ray Lou and with Ron Fauché between now and wrapping up this one. Alan made me even wonder for a minute and question whether it was Wednesday or Thursday. But it is indeed Wednesday. So, of course, we'll get New York and California drawn today, and we'll start to really tomorrow. We are going to have that little get-together between Hammer, who's on his way here. He's taking the overnight, in fact. He'll be on the red eye. And so we'll have a bleary Hammer tomorrow. John Parada is coming back. And I think we're hoping of getting Mike Lakow And we're going to have basically a racing racing director and that type of a conversation, and we'll do plenty of handicapping of the weekend. And everywhere you look, Ray Lou Gutierrez is in the PPs. He's at Aqueduct. He's going to be at Keeneland. He's at Oaklawn, and most recently he was receiving the jockey title for the meet at Fairgrounds. Ray Lou, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This obviously, you're having plenty of success, but winning a riding title, getting that first one, closing out the meet the way you did with South Lawn, winning the Fairground Oaks. Talk about the winter in New Orleans.
It was a tremendous winter of many opportunities were given to Jose and I, and we certainly took advantage of it. I mean, the weather was fantastic, and you couldn't ask to be in a better setting this winter. We're very grateful for all the opportunities.
And talk about, what do you think it means to your career, and what your expectations were coming into the winter, and, then the way you more or less caught a wave and just kept riding it.
Absolutely. It was no secret that, Jose and I, we went into that meet, gearing for lead and rider last year. We were contention, but we would ship out to Oakland a lot, for Barber Road, and mostly for Johnny Ortiz's stable, and that certainly took some momentum away from us. But this year we planned on staying there more and competing for the title, and for my career, it means the world to me. Growing up the son of a trainer and being on the backside, I always wanted to be lead and rider, and it's certainly I'm very proud of it, and it's certainly a sense of gratefulness, to win on South Lawn. We knew going into the race she was working really good, we were going to be extremely live, and to win a race of that caliber and qualify for the Kentucky Oaks and to get my leading rider title to clinch at the same day, I'll never forget that day, and it was certainly a great day. That one of the happiest days of my life, besides graduating, getting my degree.
Well, you went to Cortland, and grew up, in and around Finger Lakes and Rochester, Farmington.
Right.
Talk a little bit about, keeping, basically keeping your options open, getting, an education, and when it comes to riding, physically, it feels like, you don't have anything holding you back, and it doesn't look like you're
right.
going to grow out of, in terms of height or weight. It feels like,
right.
You can do this as long as you want.
Certainly, I'm very grateful for my size, but I'm going to Cortland. I graduated with a degree in exercise science, exercise physiology, and it's definitely helped me manage my weight and in terms of getting light and but being strong at the same time. I pride myself on my strength at the end of a race and my fitness, and that's a testament to my degree, and a testament also to my family, because there was no becoming a jockey with their permission unless I brought them a college degree. And that's something that they working for my dad, he loved having me in the barn, and he wanted me to be lead and rider wherever I was, but he was all about me getting an education, because his brother, my uncle, was a jockey, and I have two other uncles that are jockeys, and we know the ups and downs of the games and the financial, economical instability that it has, and of course the risk of injury. So getting a college degree is very important to me, and for the people that I grew up with, that Finger Lakes on the backside, I'm actually at the track right now. That's the first thing. As soon as I told myself, if I win the title, I'm going right back home. Cause I want to be around the people that have been here my whole life. Since I was 6 years old, wreaking havoc on the backside, picking up cans. and it's cool. That my dad's been in the same barn for about 20 years, and I'm here right now, and it's just a sweet sense of I could see all the things that the tests that him and my uncles put me through, and all the exercises they put me through from one end of the shed row to the other one, and just being here now and seeing the horses, seeing my old grooming box with my name still on it, and my dad refuses to take my name off of it just so
he says if I ever get too high, I can just remember where I came from. So it's so cool to come back to Finger Lakes always, and I'm glad to be here right now, and providing free labor for my dad for all the time he brought me to soccer practice. So I'm just really happy to be here and with all the people, you know, that have always helped me become the man I am today.
Ray Lou Gutierrez is with us on the heels of winning the Fairgrounds Oaks on Saturday and closing out the meet as the leading rider. And we'll talk about what's coming up. You talk about where you've been. And you refer, of course, to, you know, to Jose Santos Jr., who's created this whole new way of being a jock agent. What is the plan? I mean, you've obviously got short term, medium, and long term goals, Ray Lou, that you know that are in your mind. Talk about where you're going to go next, and where you want to be ultimately.
This Friday I'll be at Aqueduct, and Saturday and Sunday I'll be at Oakland. And Sunday night, I'll be on a plane again to get back to Kentucky to start gearing up for the Keeneland meet, which begins April 7th or April 8th, one of the two. But in the short term, that's Jose's job. That's it's pretty normal to see us anywhere in the country. So wherever Jose puts me on a horse, I usually end up going there. I can navigate my way around pretty much any airport in this country. So that's a testament to Jose. But in the long term, I'm from here, and it's no secret where I would like to be a champion one day. There's no secret where I would like to ride one day, and that's back in the on Naira. As I improve as a rider, I feel like the best riders in the country, they've all at least given an opportunity to ride in New York and Saratoga and Belmont, of course, Aqueduct, and that's my long-term ambitions to try one day to return and be champion on the New York circuit, you know.
Yep.
But that's extremely down the line, or whenever, you know, if the opportunity will present itself, it will. But as long as that, I do love being in Kentucky. I love riding at Churchill. I love riding at Keeneland, and I'm so happy to be there, and all the horses that I ride there, I've been given so many opportunities. But definitely on a personal stand, you know, just because of all the people I've grown up with and all the people I've been with, it would be an honor to be back in on the Naira circuit, because, you know, it's like you can get in the winner's circle picture and it's like, hey, that kid went to college with me, or that was my college roommate. You know, my college roommate is like literally the marketing. He works for the ticket sales at Naira. You know, and it was like, you know, we talked about it all throughout college, and then boom, he works for Naira. You know, and
that's great.
It was just. Or when you go to Saratoga, it's like, I remember you from the fifth grade, and I was like, oh yeah, I saw you at church that one day. You know, and it was just like that happens. You know, when I'm in New York, so it certainly would be a dream come true. But you know, we're in Kentucky right now, and that's what we're going to focus on.
Well, you're riding Friday at Aqueduct. You got five mounts, Ed DeLauro and Mark Henning, Eduardo Jones, Bruce Brown, and Bill Morey. But then out to Oaklawn is mentioned, and D. Wayne has got you on three, including in the fantasy, Take Charge Brianna, Bourbon Bash in the Arkansas Derby, and Rocking Rocket in the Hot Springs, and plus your Brett Calhoun, who, of course, you rode Hidden Connection for to one of your great stake wins. You're on Go West in the 11th as well. So the late portion of the card featured with the three stakes.
Right, right. And that's how I was saying. Like, I've been like, Jose, I gotta go ride at Aqueduct, man. I'm chomping at the bit to return to Gotham City, man. I gotta get there, and you know, and he did. He was a little, I don't know. And I kept going at it, and you know, he made me happy. And then as far as getting all those mounts at Oakland, that was all him. I was unaware that I was going to return to Oakland or to ride for Coach or for Brett or anybody. Then I just see the overnight the next day, and there's my name. So I was just like, he's like, hey, by the way, you're riding in the Arkansas Derby. And I was like, all right, cool, I'll get there. So I'm really excited, but that's just how Jose does. I mean, I joked with him the other day. I was just like, come on, man, you got these stakes at Sunland, and you're riding with me claimers at in Aqueduct. And I eventually I'll have him hustling some Finger Lakes if that's the case.
But, well, Bourbon Bash has got the rail and actually is a horse that, you know, just kind of nibbling underneath the top level with this group. Do you get on some in the morning for Lucas?
I haven't, just because Coach is based at Oakland. But I watched Bourbon's replay. I loved how he ran last time. He was in that slop. He made a big middle move. Into the first turn, he was, you know, shuffled back just because he went so wide. And he had a tough trip, and he still only lost by about six lengths.
Yeah.
You know, and he got a really good number. And the horse that Johnny V rode got like a 91 compared to his 86. And there's two, like, completely different trips, so... Breaking from that one hole, I know we're going to be able to save some ground into the first turn, and we're going to work out a trip from there. But he's worked sensationally since his last race. He's got to work in like 46-2, and came back the other day. We worked at a slower work just to get kind of prepped into the race. So I really love, you know, I know he's a long shot, but I really do love him going into the race. And, you know, it's Coach. You know, he knows how to win all these big races.
Well, he's had a terrific meet. In the Philly race, Take Charge Brianna, and pretty much this one is... has been ridden by a hatful, coming off of a good performance, actually, in an allowance that looked like a little bit of a confidence builder. And to be honest, those two stake tries, the Martha Washington and the Honey Bee, some of that may have been a little wet track. It doesn't look like she has any interest in a wet track, Take Charge Brianna.
Right, and, you know, you see last time she made a big run, she finished second with David, and, you know, David rode her great, and we're going to try to expect the same thing. You know, we got a good post that, you know, and in terms of that type of field, just because of the size, you know, we're just going to be able to sit out there and relax, and we're going to make one run again. You know, that seems like she likes to run that way, and that's how she will be ridden, but it's definitely, I feel like it's one of those races where, I mean, you take wet paint, but then you say, well, wet paint won on the slop that day. Maybe wet paint really loves the slop.
Yep.
You know, you don't know.
Yeah.
So, besides wet paint, I think it's a race that's pretty, you know, it's open.
I would not argue. That 11th, you're on the rail and seemingly got a chance to, you know, break running on Go West. This is a $125,000 purse for a first level allowance. This is the Calhoun horse that we mentioned. You take it over for Cisco Arrieta. But also a couple of wins. Alvarez rode this gelding to a couple of wins at Sam Houston earlier in the winter. This horse is all right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm over at Brett's house quite a bit, and you know, he brought me into the office, the man cave, and. You know, we were joking one day, we were just talking numbers, and, you know, Go West has been running some really good figures over at Houston. And, you know, after his latest performance, I finished second up there, and, you know, I was just, hey, like, you know, if there's a chance, I want to ride him again. I want to ride him, you know, and, you know, Brett, you know, he likes to mess with me and whatnot, but he said, really? I said, yeah, I'd really like to ride him. And it's kind of funny, I didn't expect to end up riding him, but here we are, and he's got a huge... He's really fast. He's a horse. He's going to be on the rail. But, you know, there's some speed on the race. I've also rode Emerald's Force and one on him who's also in the race. And he's a horse that will probably need to be on the lead as well. So it's a race that, you know, we're going to play the break and we can be extremely aggressive and just take over. But, you know, there's a lot of speed toward outside. You know, we'll be checking to see who goes with us. But Go West, he's on the rise. He's been stepping up every time. And we expect a big performance out of him.
There's a five-year-old gelding that was, well, the time he was away from last May, he was gelded, and he's come back as a better horse. So Go West in the 11th at Oaklawn. Well, Ray Lou, I could not resist the chance to congratulate you. It was such a really an exciting day Saturday to watch all the action at Fairgrounds, and Ron Fichet is going to join us next. As well,
cool.
Celebrate his season. But
right.
Good luck in New York on Friday and in Hot Springs on Saturday. And we'll see you at Keeneland next week.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, you will. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Not at all. Ray Lou Gutierrez, everybody, who is really a fun personality and obviously bright and has got the kind of jock that the public, you know, needs to see and should be presented the very marketable type, and he's fun, he's a good sport, he takes our Speaking of being a good sport, Andy constantly is giving Ray Lou the business on on Twitter and in person. You can follow Ray at on Twitter. It's Ray Guti, R-E-Y-G-U-T-I, Jockey. Ray Guti, Jockey. And such a great picture of him and Joe Santos in the winner's circle being presented their the riding title trophy. Look at the smile on Ray Lou. That's great. In fact, that's got to be a Hodges photograph. I will use that instead of, well, maybe I'll put him on, maybe a picture of him on a horse. I don't know. All right. Well, we'll decide. That was fun. And I was just thinking, I can't remember if he rode when he was a bug and in New York. If he, gonna have to look through some of our PPs. Can't remember if Gary put him on one of ours. No, I can't remember. All right. Ron Fauché is next, and this has been a busy morning. We'll save Jerry O'Dwyer, I guess, for tomorrow. We'll get Jerry with him having just come back from Dubai, and we'll go right back to Louisiana. And Ron Fauché joins us on the heels of another Fairgrounds training title. Ron, congratulations.
Hey, Steve, thank you for having me, buddy. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Not at all. And I sometimes we focus on these kinds of things. We just had Ray Lou to celebrate his first title as a riding title as a jock. What was notable about what came out Saturday with you becoming winning another one, it was your piece of news that you're going to step away from having your name in the program and are going to do some jock agent work, kind of take a bit of a freshening. And I really thought it was important to hear from you on that topic.
Yes, sir. Well, I mean, look, it's something I've been thinking about for a little bit. It didn't just happen overnight, you know. Look, training in Louisiana year-round, you're faced with some obstacles that... you know, I mean, every state you're faced with obstacles, but the ones here, the price of everything has just increased dramatically for us. You know, I mean, the price of feed, the price of bedding and hay and amongst everything. And, you know, we've really operated, as a year-round trainer in Louisiana, I mean, I think we operate just as well as if we were operating in Kentucky, New York, or wherever, you know.
Sure.
And the day rate that, you know, the purse structure doesn't really match with the day rate what you get for a bigger trainer, you know, here in Louisiana. It's a little easier to train less horses and not have the three assistants like I had, you know. It's a little more feasible, you know, financially, you know, but, with the numbers, it just, you know, it was a good time for me to just take a step back, take a little breather, you know, be able to spend, I'm going to spend a lot more time with my children this summer and, take them on a couple trips and, you know, look, I mean, to work with the same type of people, but not have, you know, as a jockey agent, you can't lose money doing it, you know, let's face it, you can't lose money doing it. But, look, I'm going to be representing, Jose Luis Rodriguez, who's coming off his first, you know, ever meet really in the United States. He finished sixth at the Fairgrounds. And, I mean, had a stellar meet and his ride improved throughout the meet. And, you know, we're going to be based here in Louisiana, but, you know, we'll ride, you know, anywhere it takes us really. But, you know, I was looking for a slight change of pace, you know, I mean, obviously the stresses that go along with being a trainer and you know, trying to make it. But it was just it was just a good time for me to do it, I thought. And you know, I mean, if I had to say, I think I will return to training, but there's just so much uncertainty right now in the industry. And you know, with everything, you know, with HISA, you know, there's going to, you know, be, you know, if it's fully implemented, you know, there's going to be a lot more fees there. You know, you don't like to, I mean, I love being a horse trainer. I mean, it's who I am. It's what it is me, you know, it's a way of life. But you know, it's tough to wake up every morning and have the success we've had, yet, you know, you're doing it for the love of it and the fun of it, but you know, and you're putting just as much into it as any, you know, Kentucky or New York trainer does that's getting $100 plus a day. But you just can't get that kind of day rate being in Louisiana year round, you know. If I were to come back, you know, I will do things a little different. I'll train a smaller stable and you know, make it to where it's, I won't be losing money or breaking even doing it.
Well,
you know, so
that's what's, I don't want to say disturbing, but I will say alarming. I mean, mm-hmm. you've won three straight training titles at Fairgrounds, which is a B+, A- meet in the winter. Probably second only to the major circuits. And, you know, you've won 40, 43, and 42 races. And so for people to hear that it's clearly not financially viable to make sense, it is alarming. And Louisiana's a state with gaming.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I mean, of the year-round trainers in Louisiana, I have the highest day rate, you know? So it just goes to show you. I mean, look, I mean, Louisiana, it, through the years, it operates a little differently, you know? I mean, you know, over the summer, or most tracks, actually, all four tracks, I mean, you know, they have walking wheels that can be used. We never would take advantage of that. We always use hot walkers, you know. I mean, but that's just the way that I like to do things. I know it costs more money, you know, but that's the way that, you know, I come up under Todd Pletcher, Steve Claseris, you know, a bunch, you know, those guys. I mean, you know, there was no walking wheels around those barns. I try to implement, you know, the best knowledge that I have of being a horse trainer and take the best of all the trainers that I've worked for and put that into my system, you know. And, you know, there are, you know, but I'm an all or nothing kind of guy, I guess. You know, I'm not going to start, I've always operated on one rule, and it's always number one, what is best for the horse, always. Number two, what's best for the owner, and everyone else is a distant third, you know. And I would never stray from that rule, you know. So
Well, you've had too much success with not, you know, not limited, of course, to Louisiana bred types. That portion of it, it just gets me. They got me concerned when I heard you say that. And you know, we understand the family kind of scenario, and you introduced your girlfriend to everybody. You want to take time for yourself, but it was obvious to me that at the heart of this was the fact that you're losing money. And if you win three straight training titles and aren't making it, you know, and it's not viable for an operation like yours, mm-hmm. we've all got to be worried.
Yeah, and look, and you can talk to, I mean, I'm not going to mention anybody by name, but I mean, you talk to a lot of guys, Kentucky, the guys that are getting 100, 110 a day, I mean, these guys are barely hanging on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's deeply concerning. I mean, the price of feed is just phenomenal, and the help, I mean, it's just gotten really outrageous, you know? And, you know, you I mean, look, I would pay, you know, just as good, if not better than anybody, you know, in Louisiana. And that's just always how we operated, you know. And but it is deeply concerning. And you throw HISO on top of it, it's even more concerning. You know, I don't think HISO will ever be implemented in Louisiana, even if they win the Supreme Court ruling. I can't see Louisiana adopting it. I would think they would opt out, you know. Just with the added fees, I mean, I don't see how these guys could make it, you know. I know I couldn't, you know, so.
I was worried that this was the kind of conversation that we'd end up, having. I at the same time, let's appreciate, what a nice meet it was. 42 wins, and let's acknowledge the way you finished with those stake wins to round it out.
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, you know, to win the Crescent City Derby and win the Crescent City Oaks, you know, Louisiana Derby Day, my hometown, God, it was awesome to close it out like that. And then to win three races the last day of the meet, and it was so great to go out that way. I mean, look, I have no regrets whatsoever. I've stayed in Louisiana throughout. I've been offered to go out of state many times. And I mean, we've gone out of state and shipped out of state, but to have major circuit strings out of the state, we've always kept grounded in Louisiana, and it's because I have children here, and it's because this is where I want to be. I've always thought that. I mean, if I can do what I want to do, where I want to do it, you know, that's what I'm going to do, you know. And, and I'm going to do it, take that same approach currently, just, you know, being a jockey agent. And I'm looking forward to it, you know. I'm looking forward to it. It's a change of pace. And I got an excellent rider that I think is going to do very well. And I still get to hang around the same kind of people, and I get to sit back and reflect and see, and, you know, look at, you know, my life and career moving forward, and make a decision what we're going to do. But I think a lot of that may not even be in my hands, you know. So it's going to be the outside, you know, other issues that in the industry that, you know, we'll just kind of monitor and see what happens. But look, I've had an excellent career, and like I said, no regrets. If I it's hard for me to say, but if I don't ever train a horse, I'm completely content with the career we've had. But I hope to train again, you know. I'm sure I would do it a lot, you know. It's several things different. Number one, probably not take on as many horses, do it more for enjoyment than anything, you know.
Yeah. Hey, so. we got about 3-4 minutes, a couple follow-ups. I mean, if that doesn't happen, gotta remind everybody about what Ron has achieved. I can think back to conversations. Sunbeam was one of my favorite horses to talk about with you, and I can think back to Calder and Gantry winning the Smile, which I think is your only graded stake win.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that's been about over 10 years. And then at that time we made the decision to just stay in Louisiana, you know. But no, we've had some runners along the way. Monty Mann, he was a claimer, that, you know, ripped off 7 in a row off the claim, 5 of them stakes. I mean, we've had a lot of fun. We've had a lot of really nice horses along the way. A lot of Louisiana breds. I love the Louisiana bred program. I love it. And I want everybody to know that it's on the up and up, and it's getting better. The price, we have had price increases over the summer, which we desperately needed. Allowance races are up, you know, eight, nine, 10,000 throughout the summer out of Angelin, and probably closer to, you know, 7,000 or 8,000 at Louisiana Downs. And there's a lot of good people and a lot of smart people that have worked, that are working together on, you know, all throughout Louisiana racing, the racing commission, the HBPA. And they're going to get things right. I mean, we're going to get things right. You know, but there's some stalemates with the HHR, you know, and there's stuff that needs to get cleaned up there. The you know, it's just stalemates with the lawyers and trying to get that fully implemented throughout the state. But it's going to be good. It just takes time, you know, And, you know, I'm always going to be a strong supporter of Louisiana racing, whether I'm a trainer, whether I'm an agent, whether I'm a breeder, eventually just get out and become an owner or whatever. But I love it. I love Louisiana racing, and it's given me so much joy, and I'll always be a part of it, you know.
That'll be a part of you, and of course, some of the owners, Mrs. Evelyn, obviously, and who else would you acknowledge?
I've trained for so many great owners along the years. I mean, there's so many awesome owners in Louisiana. Of course, Evelyn, and you know, look, it's hard for me to just start listing them.
Sure.
Because, I mean, so many of them mean so much to me, and it's become more like a family base than anything. You know, I mean, like, you know, a lot of my owners I consider some of my best friends, and you know, it's hard to walk away from it because, yep, of that. You know, it's, yep, it's harder for them in a sense, I think, than it is for me in some ways. You know, so but I want to acknowledge David T. Ray. He's going to take the majority of the horses, and he's going to be a phenomenal trainer. This guy's awesome. He's been with me for 5 years as an assistant, and you know, he's one of the best horsemen I've ever been around. So I'm really looking forward to see how he does, you know, and you know, looking forward to riding a lot of those horses,
yeah,
as well,
exactly,
as an agent.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. And I heard you reference David. David, the last name again?
Well, it's pronounced Tari, but everybody calls him T-Ray. That's what we call him.
Gotcha.
T-Ray. Yes, sir.
All right, so we'll watch for the name in the program. Well, Ron, I wanted to make sure to acknowledge, you know, not knowing what lies ahead in terms of, you know, having the name in the program again, but you've had great success over 10-plus years, and respected and well-liked, and one of the top horsemen, not just limited to Louisiana. So what a great way to go out, if that's the way it's going to end.
Yes, sir. Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate your support through the years.
Ron Fauché, everybody, and three straight Fairgrounds training titles, and if that's, you know, if that kind of success isn't enough to sustain the horsemen, we got trouble. No doubt. Anyway, I had to have that conversation. Thanks to Ron. Thanks to Ray Lou Gutierrez, Alan Foreman, of course, Sid, Sirewatch Pedigree Focus. Brought to you by Hillendale. Mike Welch stopped by, and we started the morning with Dick, who gave you the pick three to close out, and the pick three was okay. How about the trifecta that he gave out? $70, I think, $70, I think, was the try in the last, with the 111-12. I think it went 12-111. Back here tomorrow at Gulfstream for the Thursday edition. Hammer's going to be here. Parada will be back. We'll get Mike Lakow in here and more. Good luck if you're playing today. They're racing here at Gulfstream and Tampa and elsewhere. Talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Thanks.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.